the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
Hey, welcome everyone. God bless you for tuning in to The Winds of Change. It's a Wednesday, so you're here for Brain Wrinkling Wednesday with Father Tom Coyes. Today, I have a wonderful guest with me, and we're going to go into the world of Catholic novels. There's a number of good ones, and I think we got a great one here. This is Steve Thomas. He's a Chicagoan around here, and he's got a book out called Catholic Joe, subtitle Superhero. It's kind of a cute little title, I must say. Hopefully, all the young budding boys who want to grow up to be superheroes will decide to read through it and dive into it. I have to confess that I haven't read it yet, but I've heard some good reviews, and I'm looking forward to getting into it. Anyways, so without too much further ado, first, let's get Steve to introduce himself. And good question. That is always good. And as you go into a book, what's this book about? Why'd you write it? And what do you think? Why should people pick it up?
Thanks, Father Coyes. Great to be here with you. And so the book primarily is a Catholic fiction. It's a thriller. And it has to do with the protagonist, Joseph Salvatore, actually Lieutenant General Joseph Salvatore. Also trained spec ops, very, at one time was the baddest dude on the planet. And so what it starts out is with him getting woke out of the military, right? And then he finds out his youngest brother, Vinny, again, he comes from a big Italian family, finds out Vinny is wanting to get divorced. And so Joe just couldn't understand that. So he flies out to Las Vegas where Vinny's living. And, and like two good Italian brothers, they fight. And, of course, the fight didn't last long because Joe is still very, very adept at, at self-defense. And so he's like, Vinny, what happened? And so the story starts there. So really kind of in the micro, Joe is working with his brother Vinny, but then it expands out to the macro where he delves into the church and some of the problems and, corruption and things like that in the church, specifically around marriage. So this book is a treatise on what the Catholic Church teaches on marriage. So any women out there, if you want your husband to treat you better, have him read the book.
Okay, Steve, you got to explain for us non-military people. You use that phrase, he was a spec op. Does that mean he's an optometrist and something of the sort?
Oh my goodness, that's funny. No, so spec ops is special operations. So what he did is he worked with special operations. So any type of like Navy SEALs, Green Berets, anything to do with highly specialized hand-to-hand combat. So that's what, again, Joe is, he's a man's man. He's tough. Again, he could, as the book says, he could, take an enemy out with his bare hands and caress his wife and children with those same hands. So we call him a kinesthetic man. So he's somebody that has the best of all things, physical, emotional, intellectual. So he's a highly intellectual guy, very much into technology. And the book takes you all through the church, and it really, it exposes, I think, the beauty of our faith as well as, you know, what it means to be a man. So there's a lot of good lessons in there, and I've gotten a lot of good feedback from people.
I find it a bit interesting that the opening salvo of how to dive into what Catholic life means and everything comes from a debate over getting divorced or not. It really is a difficult challenge of our world today. A day doesn't go by. A lot of our people, of course, are divorced. Some remarried. A lot of people don't think about what an annulment is, and that's a whole crazy topic in itself. But to try to do the battle to stay married is where some people are. And for that, I'd say the super joke, superhero guy can give some inspirations. People that are already divorced and remarried, they're not able to go back, as it were. There may be some cases where that's possible. But I'm just going to put in the little plug for those who cannot go back. Make sure that you talk to a priest and work on that annulment. There's a lot of graces that come from it, but don't give up so easily. I guess that's part of it. I'm sure that's part of the super joke.
Yeah. So, and thank you, Father Coyce, for pointing out that, again, when I talk about marriage, I want to be especially sensitive to people who have gone through divorce. So again, this is not, you know, this is not meant to, you know, to make them, you know, to crush them or anything like that. I actually came from divorce. So my parents divorced when I was young. I call it the crucible of divorce, because when you divorce, there's a part of you, as a child, I think there's a part of you that, you know, a fracture in your soul, if you will, where darkness enters. I mean, it does. And I know with myself, you know, I went through a lot of tough times going through the divorce as a child. And it was really because of that suffering that I went through, and that's really what's fueled my passion for marriage. And like, you know, Father, like you said, you know, those people who are going through it, you know, the grass is never greener on the other side. It's always worth fighting for. And that's the thing, is that, you know, maybe there's a small part of me that through writing this book, you know, as a child, you know, you always want your parents to get back together. I mean, I'm an old man now, but the thing is, you know, there's still a little child in me that, you know, that wants a happy ending. And so not to give away the ending of the book, but there's a lot of good things in there for people. There's a lot of encouragement, you know, a lot of things that I think that could be helpful to people, especially people that are struggling in their marriage. Like I said, every couple that's married, I'll give you a story. So my mother-in-law, Mary Olson, she read the book, and she couldn't put it down. It's, you know, it was like 2 a.m. in the morning. My eyes were burning. I couldn't put it down. And she, you know, she said, the thing that really struck me, she goes, I wish I would have read this book before I'd gotten married, because I would have been a much better wife. And I thought, for my mother-in-law, that was pretty high praise, right?
I think that is a good theme for young people to consider. We call it the vocation of marriage. We call it a sacrament. We call it a mission, as it were. It is incredibly difficult to look at a person you love, you fall in love with, and see in that other person a mission to help holify. I think I just made up that word, to make holy the other person, which is quite a challenge. When you say women who would read this book, what I imagine you're leaning toward is when a woman appreciates a man's need for being important, a man's need for accomplishing something, a man's need for having real meaning in life, and if the woman could help him see that, discover it, et cetera. Is that something where you're going at? Or?
Yeah. Actually, that's a good point. I think that men have lost a lot of their sense of what it means to be a man. I think the whole idea of masculinity, how they call it toxic masculinity. This is something the book really addresses, and it addresses what does it mean for a woman or a wife to serve, to be submissive? I remember talking to Father Ripinger a few weeks ago. And one of the things that he said is, he goes, a woman will submit and obey in as much as a man will lay himself down for her. And so men, if you want your wife to really submit and to really obey, you've got to lay your life down for her. And likewise, women, if you want your, if your husband is going to lay himself down, then there are times where, again, we've lost that whole idea of the structure of marriage and the structure of family, and everything is just upside down these days. And let me just, one of the really motivating factors for me with this is, when I was young, I went through a reversion back in high school. I found this little white booklet. It was Mother of Christ Crusade. And it was all about the story of Fatima. And it just changed my life. I read this book. And again, I was drinking and smoking and just not living a good lifestyle at all. I was with the fast crowd, right? And so I read this booklet, and it talked about these little kids making sacrifices, souls falling into hell like snowflakes. And it just hit me. And so one of the things about that always stuck with me is our Blessed Mother at Fatima said, she goes, the final battle will be over marriage and family. The final battle will be over marriage and family. And that's why one of the reasons, the many reasons why I wrote this book, and, Catholic Joe, he is we'll call him the general of the church militant, and, leave it to God to use a fictional character to actually help, revamp the church.
Indeed, that's those stories when we're little mean a lot, and I'm afraid in much of our catechesis we're just trying to tell kids to be nice or I can't say anything bad about it, but do random acts of kindness, which is a beautiful thing. But we're looking for more. The great heroes, the great saints, were not just nice people. They were. You got to have some sense of the battle, or some sense of an enemy that's either trying to take people down, or trying to destroy. And I'm afraid we're allergic to negativity, and most of us. Especially if you grew up with a lot of negativity, you're going to see any form of negativity as something to avoid. And I see a lot of people in our day-to-day that are, I don't know if that's a psychological, officially psychologically valid diagnosis, but I call it allergic to negativity because there's a quest, there's a desire when they go to church to be fed with things that make them feel better and things that would make them contemplate or question or think about their conscience or make them realize, I better go to confession for that one or that thing. That doesn't fly with so many of our Catholic people today. And it's kind of like the child hanging. You can see a child, you parents almost, it's a virtue for parents to protect children from bad stuff. It's a virtue when you try to keep children from hearing bad news, as it were, and seeing bad things. And so, but to be an adult, you can't just stay in that childlike bubble, I guess. And so that battle, that mission against some of the forces of evil has to be appreciated.
Yeah, and for sure. I think, and, you know, as you bring that up, I'm thinking, you know, the book, in the book, there it challenges people. It really does. And again, this is you know, it's a fiction, although I got to tell you, most of it is true. I did a lot of research on this, talked to a lot of different people. There's a book by Father Muir called Murder in the 33rd Degree. It talks about Freemasonry and the church. And I talked to a friend of mine, Philip Nielsen, who had the Red Cap Report, which talks about what he did is he actually did a portfolio on every cardinal. He had ex-FBI, Catholic FBI, actually help, you know, compile intelligence so that, again, the last conclave we had with Bergoglio, Pope Francis, you know, you had cardinals looking on Wikipedia for information on other cardinals, which, again, Wikipedia is, you know, it's a tool of the CIA. But yeah, so this book will challenge you. And what you're talking about, you know, sometimes the, you know, we're afraid to kind of share hard truths with each other. This book definitely has hard truths. It talks about, you know, some of the things like, again, vasectomy, talks about, you know, the pill, talks about all those things that, again, as a church, and again, not to, you know, some people might see it as oppression, but really what it is it's the tough love. And the thing is, when you learn the church's teaching, the beauty of the church's teaching, again, and this book shows all that, but it's very hard-hitting. And I've had people that, you know, really went through a conversion after they read the book. I've had guys come up to me with tears in their eyes and go, wow, I never really realized how, you know, why the church taught that. Or, and again, I try to weave this into a kind of a fictional tale.
All right. Maybe we can get you to do a little more play-by-play, going through all these interesting chapter titles here, Steve. Give us a sense of what the story is about. But let's take our first break. We have a wonderful audience out there, and we plug a lot of good Catholic things, and we want people to stay close to the Winds of Change. So Dan, we'll take our first break here. Thanks for listening to the Winds of Change. I'm Father Tom Coys.
You can help save a life by praying for an end to abortion in your community. Find a 40 Days for Life vigil nearby. Visit 40daysforlife.com, 40daysforlife.com, to help save a life.
I'm Father Tom Coys, and you are listening to the Winds of Change.
This Lent, we can consider the mystery of pain. Venerable Archbishop Fulton J. Sheen taught that there is only one way pain can be handled, and that is by looking at the three crosses on Calvary, and particularly our blessed Lord Jesus in the middle. Jesus took this absurd symbol of the cross, put himself upon it, and solved the enigma of life and death. He solved it by making it a condition of life. Take up your cross daily and follow me. Listen, Good Friday is the condition of Easter Sunday. You die with him, you rise with him. In other words, Jesus conquered pain by using it as a means of attaining glory. Jesus is with you in your pain. I'm Jim Littleton, formingfaithfulfamilies.com. God love you.
Welcome back, everyone. God bless you. We're the Winds of Change here. I'm Father Tom Coys. I'm with an old friend of mine who, because he came out with a book, I reconnected to him. Years ago, I knew Steve as one of the teachers for the natural family planning classes that we were pushing to our young couples, and they dove into it pretty well, and were very successful in helping a lot of couples with that. It's a key factor in a lot of the issues that revolve around Catholic marriage. It's not the only one, of course, but it's a key one. And so, but anyways, the idea of just. Listening and watching a Catholic man go through a series of problems, troubles, with his family, with his church. It's a good way to weave in those lessons. You know, Steve, it kind of comes to mind is years ago, everybody used to watch the Honeymooners. Mm. They would try to put good lessons in there or so. But of course, they weren't really overt Catholic lessons in anything. For those who know the history of media like that, I'm pretty sure it was the Flintstones that was an off-break of the Honeymooners. So we watch a story unfold about a couple, a family, friends, and obviously you try to get a lesson inside of that. So I'm gonna assume that reading the Catholic Joe is like reading a Catholic version of the Honeymooners, but that might be a little stretch.
You know, Honeymooners never came to mind, but I love one of these days, Alice to the Moon. Right. I love, how could you not help but love that? The book, there's a lot of, again, it moves in a lot of different directions, but there is the, you know, the primary kind of pulse of it is really, you know, Joe's relationship with his wife, Mary. How about if I share with you just a few chapters? I'm not going to give you all the details, but so there's one chapter where Joe is, again, he comes home, he wants to really feel a part of his kids' life. So his wife says, hey, can you go to this school board meeting? And so any of you remember recently the school board meetings where, you know, concerned parents were labeled domestic terrorists. So this kind of deals and delves directly with that. And the outcome is not something you would expect. But I have the ability to create my own reality. So this superhero, right? I don't know. Has there ever been a Catholic superhero? I don't know. I mean, obviously we have saints, but I don't ever remember hearing about a Catholic superhero.
It's a new category.
Okay. So we've started a new category. And then, so another chapter, which actually was probably one of my favorites, was, do you remember back in September 23rd, 2023, the early morning hours, the FBI raid a family, the Houck family. So Mark Houck, his wife and 7 children, FBI, full tactical gear, guns pointed at the father. And I don't know about you, but I was so disgusted with that just betrayal by our government. And just that overreach and the power. So what I did is I created my own chapter where they, again, Joe was at the school board meeting. He kind of disrupted it, their plans with what they had. So they wanted to make an example out of him and kind of do the same thing they did to the Houcks. But I can tell you that the results were 180 degrees different. And again, it was so fun writing this. You know, as a result of just some of that, you know, pent up like frustration that we experience. Some of the other chapters, Father. So I've got one chapter that where Joe is with he's on a podcast, so he's on the Joe Kroger podcast. So obviously we know Joe Rogan couldn't use his name, right? Couldn't use his name, but the interaction between Joseph Salvatore and Joe Kroger is hilarious. And it's an opportunity really to share some things in a way that, you know, doesn't feel preachy. Same thing with the Steve Cannon podcast or the War Machine. You've got Steve Bannon. But a lot of, we try to, you know, kind of capture a lot of those things. And probably my favorite chapter is the last chapter, chapter 33, which is where Joe actually... he's invited into basically to talk to the USCCB in their meeting. And so
who invited him?
Well, the corrupt bishops actually invited him because they wanted to try to find out what he knew. And so it was, the outcome was not something you would expect, but it was something that I took great delight in. Because wouldn't we all want to tell, like, the people that, you know, we feel like maybe they're screwing things up sometimes? You know, tell them kind of what they should be doing. So that was probably one of my favorites. And one of the things, one of the kind of the scenes from there is Joe actually is front of the bishops and he says, you know, fix marriage, fix it. And just not to get critical of you, Father, but if, you know, we've got two sacraments here. We've got holy orders, we've got matrimony. Holy orders, we give priests, you know, at least eight years of training, which they should. And I'm grateful they do, because, you know, we've got some really good, you know, really good priests. But marriage, you know, what do we give the sacrament of matrimony? We don't give it that same attention. You know, we might get a pamphlet that talks about what the church teaches and family planning and things like that. But just so you know, in the book, most of the priests are very strong, you know, very positive. I have to say, they're, you know, with the bishops, I do go after them a little bit. And, you know, some people were not a little uncomfortable with that. But I'm like, listen, you know, God is calling us to be true to who we are. And I felt like, you know, there was some cases where I think it was warranted.
Oh, goodness. I gotta put some real life, practical, pastoral worries on the floor here. I was talking before we started the show with Steve that in our marriage preparation that I do with my couples, I have a monthly meeting. I call it Theology of the Body instead of Pre-Cana. And I just tell them, well, we're going to use a lot of John Paul II's writings, Theology of the Body. And so obviously when people call the church, they already have their date, they already have their hall booked. We meet them with a ticking time bomb, as it were, and we try to squeeze in what we can. I suggest to them, no matter what time they start with me and how many months in advance their wedding date is, I encourage them to come to once a month to the meeting. I invariably get, after they politely hear that message, they say, okay, how many do we have to go to? And, okay, if somebody's said, if they're talking with me and it's a year and a half before the wedding, that would be like 16 months. A lot of times people are coming and it's 4 or 5 months before. And so that would be only 4 meetings, perhaps even 2, because they're away. The young people travel a lot, Steve. I find out that so many times young people, if they're engaged, they travel a lot together. More than a few occasions, I've had engaged couples come to me and say, "Oh, well, we're going to be gone. We're going to the Bahamas that weekend." And I always think, when I was young, we called that a honeymoon. Now it's just a fun getaway while you're dating somebody. Anyways, I guess what I'm trying to say is we, with the best intentions, and I have to confess, when somebody says, "How many do we have to go to?" I have been saying, "Well, go to at least 3." One of my great helpers, she keeps saying, "No, don't tell them at least 3. Tell them every month you have to come." And then, of course, I try that, but it doesn't work. People, so as much of a responsibility is on us in the church, we can only work so far with the cooperation that the lay people do. You know, I try to get them once a month, but they're inevitably going to try to get away with as little as possible.
Yeah. No. And listen. I definitely don't want to come down on you, Father. You're more the exception than the rule. There are a number of, again, situations where, you know, again, it's very minimal, and a lot of that comes down to, I would say, the leadership as far as the bishops, and I remember one time. So give you an example. So my wife and I, when we were teaching natural family planning, we were able to present to the Presbyteral Council, and it was intense. So we were there talking, and again, just trying to share my own personal experience, where I came from, you know, the trauma of divorce, the, you know, why marriage is so important, why the church is teaching which again, when I fully, you know, I mean, I went through the seminary for 5 years. I still didn't really know after that point really what the church taught about marriage. So after, you know, when I really became acclimated and instructed in what the church taught, you've got to get couples the tools that they need to succeed. And so we presented to the Presbyteral Council, and, you know, I remember this one priest, he had his head down, and I thought, this son of a buck, he's sleeping, while I'm like pouring my guts out, I'm, you know, almost crying, you know. And afterwards, I go, what, Father Dennis? I go, you know, what, couldn't stay awake? He goes, no, dude. He goes, I was praying. He goes, I actually saw Jesus and Mary standing behind you when you were talking about marriage and family. And I was like, whew. And so when we finished, you know, actually everybody applauded, and they said, well, that's the first time they've ever applauded at, you know, at something like this. But then, you know, when we left, we were standing outside the room. They began to argue. And so there were a number, you know, and it got so loud, they had to close the door. And we thought, oh, we better go to the chapel and pray, because Satan is like wanting to definitely interject here. And so, you know, we went to the chapel and prayed. And then my wife went into labor, and our son, Francis Xavier, who actually is the patron of the Joliet Diocese, Francis Xavier was born after that meeting. So we were very intricately involved and intimately involved in the church, in regards to our diocese, in regards to marriage and what needs to happen with marriage. So I'm not trying to come down on you at all. So please don't take that.
Indeed, but Steve, that reminds me of a presbyteral council that I was at. I got to tell you this little story, which just gives us a flavor of what the church we're living in, right, and everything. We were talking about tithing. You know, somebody from the diocese was trying to push the idea of increasing offertory campaigns, right? Which is a normal thing that you could imagine lots of priests and people in the church are going to try to do. The person who gave about a 45-minute talk to the Presbyteral Council on tithing was talking about how you sacrifice for your church, your family, etc. And after that 45 minutes, which was it was a good, you know, basic, probably what we'd expect from someone pushing giving in a church, I raised my hand and I asked, hey, have you ever? I may or may not have prefaced it with the case, with the introduction that I had just been to Wichita, Kansas. I went to a conference in Wichita, Kansas, where they were, I'll just say, kind of leading the country in getting tithing up and running in Catholic parishes. So there were, and the people that I was meeting with were, you know, just say, solid Catholics, et cetera. Anyways, one of the presenters at that Wichita conference mentioned how they were a family, a husband and a wife, and they weave in the topic of natural family planning. And I asked the presenter at the Presbyteral Council, have you ever thought of weaving in the theme of natural family planning as we talk to people about being generous with their giving in the church? To me, it's a beautiful combination. You have to sacrifice for your family. You put God first, as it were, and then you see the need. You see how challenging it is to live the full Catholic life. So you need more grace. So you tend to go to church more. You tend to go to confession more. That idea of self-sacrifice in the internal part of your life can spill over into a sacrificial attitude when it comes to your wallet. Mm-hmm. So anyways, I threw that out as a, did you ever consider? And you can imagine the crickets that pursued it. And she said, I've never thought of that. Cardinal George was there, and Cardinal George at least stepped in, and he said, interesting. I guess there is a connection. You know, both require being generous. I was so disappointed because I was, I guess what I felt I was doing was, as we sometimes say in baseball terminology, I was throwing them a softball so that they could hit a home run. But they saw it as a wild pitch that has nothing to do with the topic they were talking about. I really see that the one leads to another. Anyways, okay, we got to take our second break here. I'd like you to get back into the book here a little bit, Steve. We got to find out what Catholic Joe, superhero, is all about. We want people to jump on Amazon, or where does this come from?
Actually, you know, we're going to send them to our website. That's where I want them to buy it, because we just got thousands of books in. So I had a generous donor. Again, talk about God's providence. We have a generous donor that actually bought for me. He wanted to buy 10,000 books, and so they just arrived yesterday. My body is sore. Thank God my two sons were home, because we had to unload every box individually by hand. But anyway, so I would like them to go to CatholicJoeSuperhero.com, CatholicJoeSuperhero.com, and buy the book, and you will love it.
Marvelous. Let's take our second break now as we continue our Brain Wrinkling Wednesday. Thanks for listening to The Winds of Change. I'm Father Tom Coys.
St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, is open 24 hours a day, 7 days per week, for adoration of the Blessed Sacrament in the iconic monstrance. The Blessed Sacrament is reposed during the celebration of Mass and during special events. St. Stan's doors are always open for adoration. Come anytime, day or night. St. Stan's is located two blocks north of Division on Noble, right off the Kennedy. Visit ststanschurch.org.
We are the students of St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy.
Your children can join them for face-to-face classroom instruction. Visit ststanschicago.org to find out how.
And you're listening to The Winds of Change.
St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy. St. Stan's is an exceptional private elementary school in Chicago, serving preschool, age 3 and 4, pre-kindergarten, kindergarten, and first grades. We incorporate Catholic values and rigorous academic social-emotional learning, Chinese, Spanish, STEM, and more, providing our students with leadership and life skills to transform our world. St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy is conveniently located one block north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway. To schedule your tour, visit ststanschicago.org. ststanschicago.org.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. I'm Father Tom Coys. This is The Winds of Change. I'm here with an old friend, Steve Thomas, who just came out with a fun book with a lot of messages, a lot of good Catholic theology and all. It's called Catholic Joe, subtitle, Superhero. An adventure of a guy trying to do what he can to help the church, I guess you might say, right itself, steer the right course in one way or another. Hey, speaking about books, I want Steve to read us a little, some little sections, or... Well, I want to mention another book, because we're having a mission. Obviously, we're in this beautiful season of Lent, and a lot of parishes have Lenten missions. I want to put a little plug in for our Lenten mission here in the southwest corner of the Chicagoland area in Lamont, Illinois. We're having a guy by the name of Daniel Vinzant come. It's going to be March 13, 14, 15, and 16. March 13th, 14th, and 15th, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday at 7 p.m. Then on Saturday morning, after our 8 o'clock Mass, Daniel Vinzant will share with us. So the reason I think he got his worked so powerfully in his life is, number one, he was a Baptist minister, and he converted to Catholicism. He was down in Texas, and he lived near where the Roe versus Wade decision case came from. He befriended Jane Roe, whose real name was Norma McCorvey, and he helped her get baptized as a Christian. First, she was baptized as a Christian. Then he helped her become Catholic. And the interesting thing about this amazing story is he helped her become Catholic. Even while he was a Baptist minister, he was learning and appreciating and soaking in the grace that comes from, especially the Catholic Mass, our devotions and all the doctrines and all the rest. And so he's going to come to St. James Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, March 13, 14, 15, and 16. And he'll be doing our mission. He's highlighted in a book written by a guy by the name of Joshua Prager. I don't know that he's a relative of Dennis Prager. He might be. I'm not sure. I got to find that out. I'll find out. But I'm reading that book, and I see Daniel Vincent, my old friend, all over it, and how he helped. He moved Norma McCorvey from she felt used and abused after she became the poster child of abortion rights. She felt used and abused by Planned Parenthood, and she just didn't feel the love. She felt that it really was probably a big mistake in her life. She felt the love of the Christian community that was trying to bring about a pro-life conversion in our country, as it were. She does get baptized, and then she starts to feel used and abused by the pro-life community, the Operation Rescue Gang. Now here comes Daniel Vincent, kind of a soft-spoken, Southern genteel kind of Baptist pastor, and he covers her with a lot of friendship and a lot of understanding, and hang in there. And as he's showing her bits and pieces of the gospel and also bits and pieces of Catholic theology vis-a-vis Catholic Mass, she starts to want to become Catholic. And she has that famous line that so many converts use when they say, "Why did you want to become Catholic?" She said, "I want to feel forgiven. I want the absolution that really only Catholicism offers." You know, to hear that is so very, very powerful. And we can all be touched in some way or another. Anyways, so that's another book on your to-read list, my friends. Okay, so Steve, do you got something to share? Let's keep going into Catholic Joe.
Sure, sure. Thanks, Father. So one of the things I want to do, so a couple things. I want to share a review by one of the top Catholic reviewers. This gentleman, Stephen McAvoy, he did over 400 book reviews last year. And 400, that's more than one a day. So this guy consumes books. And again, he's been doing this for a while and, you know, very respected. I'm going to read just a few little kind of blurbs from what he said. And then also I'm going to share with you a story about a pilgrimage that was made. Really, the thing that produced the grace for this book. I'm going to share that little story as well. So Stephen McAvoy, I'm just going to read it verbatim. So he said, "I kept hearing about this story before I picked it up. I had heard so many good things. I was worried I'd be disappointed because of the hype. That concern was unfounded. I absolutely love this novel and look forward to future stories in the series." He said, "The writing for a first novel is exceptional. The characters are well developed and crafted. In some ways it reads," and this is a part that I absolutely loved, "in some ways it reads like a Reacher, Jason Bourne, but Catholic book." I was like, oh yeah, definitely arrived if that's the case. The main difference, he said, is Catholic Joe knows he cannot do it on his own. He turns to his friends and he seeks heavenly help. And here's the thing, and this is the thing in the review, and there's a lot more on there. He's over 700 words on this review. I'm just reading a few things. But one of the things that really struck me, that made me really kind of give thanks, he said, I'll be honest, there were times while reading this where I stopped and prayed. I prayed for friends. I prayed for family. I prayed for the state of our world, our church. So here's a guy that, again, consumes books, and he's just stopping and praying. And to me, that was such a gift to know that not only it's not just fun, it's not just entertaining, but it's something that's going to take you deep into the heart of Christ. And that's what this book will do. It'll take you deep into the heart of God. For him to say that, I was just blown away. And, you know, again, you know, when I saw, you know, he said he's going to do it, release it, I was like, oh, geez, kind of scared to look at it. But then when I read it, I was like, just really super thankful and grateful. Everything is a gift. And again, I've gotten so many reviews. I mean, on Amazon, you know, although you can buy it on Amazon, but we'd prefer you go to the website because you can't really make any money on Amazon. And I want to do this full time. I really want to do this as my profession, and which is very difficult. But if you can go to the website, not Amazon, but Amazon, there's a lot of reviews, a lot of 5-star reviews that, you know, thank God for that. So one of the things I want to do too is, besides sharing the, you know, this one review, I want to share with you really what spawned the book and really what kind of precipitated, and we'll call it the grace that was given. So when I was, this is going back probably almost 2 years now. So let me go back even more. So 17 years ago was praying to our Blessed Mother. I said, Mother, I go, what's something we could do just for Jesus, just for your son? And this whole idea of a national Eucharistic procession, boom. It was like really powerful. So I tried, you know, I tried to get it going, was never really the right time. And then once my son, who's with the Franciscan Friars of the Renewal, he let me know that they were having this Eucharistic revival. So I reached out to Bishop Cousins and I said, you know, again, long story short, I said, we need to have a national Eucharistic procession. So, you know, they said, yes. And that was with the help of Father John Anthony Boughton, who's another CFR priest. And so they decided to do it. I was ecstatic. I thought, oh, this is my dream job. And so, you know, really just started to prepare, brought my friend in, Bud, who, you know, was going to help organize because he had his own apostolate. And so eventually what happened, though, is eventually they brought in other people and slowly just we got squeezed out. And I was a little bit disappointed. I was a lot of disappointed. But again, one of those things you just have to give to God and know that, you know, he knows what's best. And so what we decided to do is we decided to walk a similar route. So we were going to, the strategy was for us to walk with Jesus in the Eucharist in a form of a cross. So from the north, south, east, and west, we're going to land in Indianapolis. And so so we wanted to do the same thing. So what we did is we went from Marian Shrine. So I walked from the Shrine of the Immaculate Conception on the East Coast to the Shrine or the Grotto at Notre Dame. It's probably about 650 miles. And then I walked also from the south, the La Leche, towards the Grotto at Notre Dame. But there was something about that pilgrimage, and I walked on it with a guy by the name of Bud McFarland, also a guy you would probably know, Father Randall Terry, Operation Rescue, I'm no spring chicken, and you know sometimes it was like every step was pure agony, but as we were walking, we're praying. And really praying, you know, for our country, for marriage, for our church, and also just praying in anticipation for our Lord in the Eucharist, which was going to be coming. So it was that whole kind of rigorous, arduous journey of going through that really, I think, really produced the fruit and the grace that helped me write that book and why some people say, yeah, this book is anointed, which, you know, again, it's all God's grace.
Wow. And this summer, we're gathering in Indianapolis for the Eucharistic Congress. I'm not sure if there's a connection some way in that, but let's take our final break here, my friends. Daniel, let's take our final break and have a few more minutes with Steve Steve Thomas, author of Catholic Joe Superhero. I'm Father Tom Coyes, and you're listening to The Winds of Change, AM 7.
Sometimes it's tough to hear Winds of Change over the air, what with tall buildings, power lines, and other static. Now you can hear Winds of Change anywhere, anytime, or on any device. When Winds of Change is on the air, live, Monday through Friday, noon to 1, go to ststandschurch.org. Scroll down to the Winds of Change tile and click on the Listen Live button. For Winds of Change podcasts, click on Listen to Episodes or visit the Winds of Change Facebook page.
I'm Father Tom Coyes, and you are listening to the Winds of Change.
You can help save a life by praying for an end to abortion in your community. Find a 40 Days for Life vigil nearby. Visit 40daysforlife.com, 40daysforlife.com, to help save a life.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. I'm having an enjoyable interview here with a local great author, Steve Thomas, and his book, Catholic Joe Superhero. It makes your imagination run. But I got to ask you, Steve, if he's a superhero, every superhero I know helps save the world from total destruction. Does Joe save the world from total destruction?
Well, and that's the thing. So he's torn. He's torn because he knows the corruption because of his position in the military and also in the State Department. He was part of the State Department. He knows the corruption of the government, but he's also getting to see the corruption in the church. So he realizes he can't do both. So he starts with the corruption in the church, and that's what he's addressing to start with. Although book two is going to be coming out, which gives us time to go after the government as well, right? So, but yeah, he's there really to, and again, if you fix marriage, you fix the church, you fix society. I mean, marriage is really at the heart of so many things that are wrong with our country and with our world. The breakdown of marriage, the cell of society, right? Pope St. John Paul II said the primordial sacrament of matrimony is the beginning of it all. And so, so Joe, he fights for that. And as a result, things happen. And, some good things, some bad things, but yeah, it's just, again, it moves really fast and, it will hopefully, like most people tell me, it's a page turner. So it will hopefully bring people to a good place.
Okay. What dilemma does he get into? All the superheroes I know, starting with Batman or Superman, they always get caught in the crucible. The bad guys don't follow rules, and so they corner the good guy, and Batman or Superman is always hanging over a pit of fire, and if they don't stop the ticking clock, they're doomed. Do we have anything similar to that in the Catholic Joe story?
Yeah, actually, it builds to a climax at the end, and I don't want to give the climax, but there is a point where, his life is in danger, numerous times, but at the end of the book, it really builds to a climax where, they realize they've got to take this guy out because he's got too much information, he's got too much ability to disrupt, and so really, with that, and here's the one thing. So they want to take him out, but here's the thing that, when they say that, we're going to take you and your family out, that's what gets Joe going. So you don't mess with his family. You mess with him, he'll take you on, but you talk about his family, and then he just turns into a different, we'll call it supernatural creature. And getting back to the supernatural, concept, okay, we're all, right, by the merit of our baptism, we're baptized priest, prophet, king. We are kin to God, right? So we are all called to be superheroes from our baptism, and that's the beauty. And again, as you read the book, you realize the power in the sacraments. You realize the power in our faith. that allows us to do supernatural things. And again, sometimes that supernatural thing is just, you know, it's just really being loving in difficult situations. It's, you never know how you can change the trajectory of somebody's life just by a kind word or a smile or something small. You know, like St. Therese of Lisieux, she's always about the little way. But that's the thing is, you know, we can be superheroes in so many ways. And it's our faith is exciting, you know, and that's the thing is Joe brings hope. He brings courage. He's somebody that will make you proud to be Catholic. You know, we've been playing defense for so long. I'm sick and tired of playing defense. Enough of the defense. It's time to go on offense. And that's where Catholic Joe comes in to go out and kick some butt along with all of us.
Indeed. I like that. And part of playing offense is being able to say there's a beautiful side to the fullness of the faith that is too often neglected or criticized one way or another. I got it before we end. We only got a couple of minutes here, but I'm going to share a thought that I have quite often when it comes to trying to help people in marriage situations and the difficult stories that I hear between husbands and wives, and either they're going through them or they went through them. And I'm going to say it this way, quite often, the only way to solve a difficult marriage situation involves the martyrdom of one or the other or both. What I mean by that is the person suffering has been suffering a lot or a long time, and asking someone to stay in a very bad and abusive relationship is really asking them to continue their sense of martyrdom. One of the phrases I like to say almost all my weddings is Joe and Mary, as you're getting married here, you could make life a little bit of heaven here on earth. And of course, everybody knows what I'm talking about. That's a beautiful thought. But I quickly add, but Joe and Mary, you can also make life a living hell. So please do not make life hell for the one you are marrying. And that sense of being a martyr. We want our leaders to be a little more martyred than we are.
Father, just to add, one of the things that was said on my wedding day is don't just learn to live with your wife or with each other. Learn to live for each other.
Beautiful words. I think that music reminds us that our hour is ending. Steve, I want to thank you for coming out and giving this wonderful plug for this great book, great beach reading, or not even beach reading. It's a good read. I'm Father Tom Coyes. You've been listening to The Winds of Change on AM 750.